This episode of the Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico podcast is brought to you by Spectacle Eyewear. Now, if you've been watching any episodes of this podcast on our YouTube channel, you might have noticed I've been wearing some pretty cool specs lately. Well, you know where I get them? Spectacle Eyewear, 505 Tremont Street, Boston, Massachusetts. Their phone number is 617-542-9600. Head down to Spectacle. Go visit our friend Paul. You'll get yourself some cool specs. Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. We started you off today with the song Super from the brand new and fifth solo album from Leah Callahan. This new record is called Curious Tourist. It's a really good record. And Leah returns to the show today to talk about not only the record, but her songwriting process, recording, etc. We've been fans of Leah's work for a long time, Turkish Delight, Betwixt, The Glass Set, and of course her fabulous solo work. So hang on to yourself and we'll be right back. Being the big vinyl lover that I am, I'm proud to tell you about Joe's Albums in their two locations. The original shop at 317 Main Street in downtown Worcester, Massachusetts, and their second location out in Western Mass at 5 Market Street, Northampton. Both of these shops are loaded with both new and used vinyl. It's hard to walk in either shop and walk out empty-handed due to their amazing collection of records and other cool goodies like t-shirts, mugs, posters, etc. If you can't find what you're looking for in the retail stores, check out their website, joesalbums.com. Thank you, Joe, for being so cool. We love rock and roll. Yes, we do. You already know that. You already know that. If you haven't checked out the Mirror Stars podcast yet, we have a new episode out. It's essentially, it's me acting like a know-it-all rock critic. It's all subjective, right? Not entirely, because we do follow the facts. It's just the music that we get a little opinionated about, as you've heard for a long time now. So as we approach our 300th show, and yes, I do have something special planned for that, I want to remind you that this podcast relies on listener support. If you can support us on our Patreon page, patreon.com/TwistedRico, then please tell us. If you can't support us there, then please tell one person about the podcast and help us continue to grow organically as we have since January 2019, when we recorded our very first episode on Liberty Avenue in the Bloomfield section of Pittsburgh at the Azorian Cafe. The good old days. Your support is so important to this podcast. It's been our mission all along to bring you great guests, great music, and entertain you in some way or every way possible. And we do appreciate you. And of course, every single guest that has come on this podcast, we appreciate all them. It's been a blast for me to do this because I do love music. It's been a big part of my life for a long time, not just because I love music, but because I worked for so long in the music business in so many different capacities. I was recently on the Disturbing the Priest podcast, great metal podcast hosted by Brandon Baddick, who was on this show. In an episode that will be out soon. And we talked about great metal demos and the stories behind them. There were about 5 guests on the show. It was a great roundtable discussion. I talked about some of the demos that I got that were from bands that I either signed or I almost signed. It was a fun time. And it reminded me of how lucky I was to be around so many great bands just when they were getting started and playing roles in their career. I played a role in their early parts of their careers, and that means a lot to me. And that show was based on metal in the 80s. So there's been much more since then. I've worked with all kinds of bands over the years. And as you know, I love all kinds of rock and roll, indie, punk, metal, pop, hard, heavy, thrash. You know, I like it all. Hardcore, love hardcore. And that's why I'm here, to share these stories as we keep the rock and roll alive. We'll be right back.
Check 1, check 2, crisp lettuce. Oh, hey, I didn't see you. When I'm not recording hit songs, I'm listening to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. He has the best guest in all the music scene. I bow at the knees of Twisted Rico. That's right. We're making Boston shitty again. Don't ever forget that. And Twisted Rico's a big part of making that revolution happen. Dirty Jam, Space Iguanas, Ninja Stars, Desert Storm camo tanks, shooting right up your asshole. I mean, it's everything. Twisted Rico, blowing smoke. He's a goddamn king. I have a statue of Twisted Rico by my bed, and every morning I wash his tiny little statue feet. He's a god. He's a dirty god, so listen to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. That's what I'm talking about. It's Ninja Stars. It's everything, brother.
Oh, that road steamer, dude. Robbie Road Steamer, a.k.a. Rob Pitillo. He's out there making Boston shitty again, if you haven't noticed. Thanks, Robbie. Okay, so Leah Callahan is back. I have always loved Leah's sultry voice, and as time goes on, it becomes more and more apparent that she's not only a great singer, but also a phenomenal songwriter. And she continues to prove that time and time again. Okay, let's get to it. Here I am talking with Leah Callahan. Welcome to those of you watching on YouTube. This is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. If you want to hear this entire episode with intros, outros, and music, please go to Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, etc. Please welcome to the show again, Leah Callahan.
Hello. Thanks for having me today. I'm a little more nervous than I was last time because your show is getting very famous and you're getting a lot of big acts. And I'm like, oh.
You're the famous one on this podcast right now, Leah
infamous.
Callahan.
Infamous.
So how have you been?
Really good. Again, just really thrilled to be on your show. Really appreciate it. I am knee deep in just trying to promote this record, which I got in my hot little hands a couple weeks ago. And like the key time to promote is really in the months leading up to the release, as opposed to after the release, because everybody says it's old at that point. So as you can imagine, I'm just really very busy and trying to be as innovative as possible on how I get this music out there.
It's a really good record. Before we talk about Curious Taurus, which is your fifth solo record, and I think, and fourth since 2021. That's pretty incredible. Yes. Right there. And of course, you appear on several other records before that with Betwixt, Turkish Delight. I even have a Turkish Delight cassette here for prop.
Nice.
The glass set. It's a pretty impressive catalog. Your lyrics are awesome. Do you remember when you first started writing lyrics? Were you really young? I mean, were they poems when they started? Is that how you started?
Yeah, no, I always was writing lyrics for songs. So it's embarrassing because I actually have a cassette from when I was in high school, which was, if it ever appears, it will be very embarrassing. And I wrote like punk songs, just sang them with no music. And they had, you know, probably very like naive political lyrics. But, you know, I've always kind of written lyrics. And of course, I'd had my breaks where I'd quit music very dramatically for a few years here and there. So, yeah, I've always just kind of written lyrics.
How young were you when you started writing?
Probably 15, give or take. But I mean, you know, it's not like I went and wrote 15, you know, for a strong 10 years. I definitely quit music when I was around that age too, and then started up again when I was in my early 20s with Turkish Delight. So,
yeah, I remember you talking about that one of the other times that you were on the show. So you were specifically writing songs in your head. They weren't poems, right?
Yeah, no, I never really was much for poetry. I mean, I tried a little bit of I tried writing a play, I think, at one point. Maybe a little poetry. I was always interested in the arts, but theater, like right before Turkish Delight, I kind of did some experimental theater thing ideas. But yeah, it was always, the lyrics were always part and parcel with music.
Were there other songwriters at that time when you were young that you were paying attention to that influenced you and made you want to write songs?
Yeah, sure. I mean, when I was very young, it was definitely post-punk, women songwriters. Now I'm completely inarticulate, but if I had to think about it, I would say Susie and the Banshees, the Raincoats, the Slits. You know, it was very like kind of Susie wasn't as angry, but most of it would be very angry. I liked hardcore punk, but I was always kind of drawn to any female-fronted sort of punk band. So I liked Hole back in the day. I mean, I love that kind of angry Sonic Youth, which was more experimental than angry, but it was still very dark. This
Yeah.
band, the Pain Teens, I was really into them a lot. So yeah, that was really what influenced me early on, I would say, with lyrics.
I'm assuming that you've had songwriting partners over the years, but I'm thinking you were strictly the lyricist, or did you ever write any of the music, or did you just bring the melodies?
Yeah, no, excuse me. I was usually the lyricist. It came fairly easily to me, and I was what I really focused on because I don't write an instrument. I don't play an instrument, so,
Which is
but
hard to believe, by the way, because you're so in tune to what's going on. I
well,
can't
thank
believe
you.
that
I
you
mean,
don't
I did
play.
play piano when I was like age 3 to about 8 or 9, and then started singing lessons about 8, 9 years old till about 15. But I remember in Turkish Delight, because we were experimental, we would often I would pick up the drums, and play drums. And I think one or two of my bands, I tried to play bass, and I think we all tried in the early 90s to just, kind of DIY. Like I would pick up a guitar. I had an all women band for like a day. And we had like three singers basically, but yeah, I mean, primarily I've been always the lyricist, and on occasion someone else in the band would sing or write lyrics, but it just was what I did.
I know that Betwixt, you guys shared the songwriting credits four ways. I
In
believe that's what
Turkish
it's.
Delight too. Yeah,
Turkish
always.
Delight also.
Oh yeah, definitely, of course, yeah. Any band I've been in, we always shared the songwriting credit four ways, 100%.
That's
Yeah, I
cool.
mean, even if the guitarist was bringing in all of the songs, because all of us had so much participation in the co-songwriting and also just the work that we all did. We all worked so hard, so it was always four ways if it was a four-piece band.
What was the process? I'm going to have to ask you about Betwixt, since Turkish Delight, as you said, was more experimental. Betwixt had, were more like the songs were more like, I don't want to say traditional, but at that time, I guess you could say they were more traditional. What was your process? Did they start writing music and ask you to write the lyrics, or did you come in with lyrics and say, can we write something around these lyrics?
It was definitely a mix. Primarily, we'd be in the practice space and jamming, and sometimes Gordon, the cello player, would come in with a couple riffs. Sometimes Tom would come in with some guitar ideas. Very rarely, I would come in with a melody on its own. And that same with Turkish Delight, I would come in just with this melody. But yeah, I would usually write lyrics on the spot. I'm always very much inspired by the other musicians. So typically I would write along as we were playing. Sometimes I would come in with ideas, but it was usually writing right in the studio, right in the practice space.
I don't know what the history was with the guys from Turkish Delight, but I know Tom from Betwixt was in other bands before
Yes.
Betwixt started. So I imagine he probably had a lot of say with the songwriting as well in terms of what he brought in, or was he just passive in that way?
No, I mean, he was. I mean, if all of us were just not kind of vibing off something, he'd be fine with it. But we usually always would. I think we were always like, we realized there was so much sacrifice in being a musician. It's unpaid labor and among other things. And so we would always try really hard to try to write something to go along with the part. Even if immediately we were like, oh, that's the most amazing thing I've ever heard, we would, always try to write things to go along with another part. And I don't think he was several years older than Gordon. He was a few years older than myself and the drummer. We had a couple different drummers, but and yes, he'd been in several bands, whereas I'd only been in one. But I don't, he never really asserted kind of a firm hand. This is the direction we're going in. He's certainly an assertive person with a lot of ideas, and I think we were excited by that because yeah, he just came in with a lot of ideas. He did the bulk of the work of the band, for example, booking and promotion. So yeah, he did a great deal. But yeah, he never really kind of strong-armed us into going into any direction. He was pretty psyched that he's always been very into experimental music and he loved Turkish Delight. I think a lot of his colleagues and friends were like, okay, that band's all over the place. They're weird. And that's what he liked about Turkish Delight. So he was always really excited when we brought in something.
The press loved Turkish Delight. I mean, you guys really hit a spot. I think New York, you guys were real popular in New York, weren't you?
We were popular in a lot of different pockets of the United States. And I like to joke that the pockets we were popular in, we didn't actually tour to. And the
College
ones we didn't
radio,
tour to,
college radio,
definitely. Oh, it was all about college radio. I mean, there was really no other way we could find an audience. But yeah, we did really well, especially in Atlanta, Georgia, of all things. I remember we were rock stars when we went to Atlanta. And that was actually one city that actually, when you book a tour, you're kind of you get what you take what you get. So sometimes you'll go to a city and you didn't even really get airplay there, but you play anyway and no one shows up. But Atlanta was the city where we both got the airplay and we sold pretty much sold out a club. So
Really, were you surprised when you got there, or was it sold out beforehand?
it was wow. No, it was really a divey. It was called Dottie's. It was great. No,
I
I mean,
remember that place,
we kind
Dottie's.
of felt like rock stars and celebrities, to a point where when we showed up at the radio station, Chibo Amado was there and Sean Lennon, and they were talking to us like we kind of belong there. And I remember not really dolling up for the radio show. I kind of had my hair pulled back, no makeup. I didn't have my cool outfit, of course, that I wore later that evening. And I was like, maybe I should have dressed up more like a rock star because, we were being treated, like in that way. And then getting on stage that night and just having the audience kind of blow up, like respond as if, say, we were in a really good Boston show. It was pretty
Okay, I
cool.
can't let that just go by here. You met Sean Lennon at a radio station?
I did. Sean Lennon and Chibo Amado, he was performing with them at the time. He was so down to earth and so nice. And the irony is, a couple of the DJs were a little snootier to me than he was. I think it's just that young people can be a little funny and competitive and snotty. But he just was like, hey, what's up? And I'm just talking, and like it was totally normal. So yeah, I mean, it was fun. We met some interesting kind of underground celebrities
Was
when we
that a
were
college station in
touring.
Atlanta?
WRAS was a
RAS. I
college
was gonna say,
station.
yeah, that's a good
Unlike,
station.
unfortunately, a lot of college stations have been purchased by, say, NPR. And although it's public radio now, a lot of they're just inaccessible to people like me if I were to send a single or a CD out now. But at the time, it was a college radio station. It also was huge. It was like, I don't know how many watts, but like a WBCN back in the day. I mean, it was a far-reaching, huge college radio station. So being that was incredible to both be played there and be in their top whatever 10 or top 20, and also touring there was very cool.
Yeah, when I worked for labels, college radio had such a bigger impact back then. And RAS was a great station. They were the best station in Atlanta, definitely. And then you had Athens near there. I don't know if you went to Athens, but that was a great
We
market
did.
too.
We didn't get a show in Athens, but we got to experience it. And I mean, it was amazing to that
Really
culture down there.
good college town, you know? Okay, you began working with, I know I just spent a lot of little time with Turkish Delight and Betwixt, so I'm gonna jump ahead here. You began working with Richard Marr early on. I think the Glass Set was the first time that you started working with him.
Yes, I think I told that story how I walked by the greenhouse in Alston.
You did.
Like, it's Richard Marr from my past. And I don't even know. I was like, I have this idea for rock opera. I was like really frustrated with doing the solo thing for a lot of different reasons. I had this rock opera in my head, and he's like, I'll get you a band. And I was like, Okay, so he got that was where he got Andy and Eric, who at the time were in Codetta, to do that for, that album for me, and that morphed into a band. So yeah, that was my first project with Richard. It was the
Okay,
Glass
so
Death.
those guy, it was who from Codetta?
Sorry, it was Andy and Eric, so the guitar player and the bass player from the band.
Okay, not the guys that you work with now, because didn't a couple of
No.
one of those, they had nothing to do with Codetta? I don't know why I thought they did.
No,
Alex?
not at all. I mean, I still talk to Andy a lot, and we actually, he would be definitely on my list if I were to try to do a solo album and I didn't have a collaborator. I mean, the fact that he has a kid and a full-time job and is a musician, it'd be very difficult to get the time for him to do it, but he would definitely be on my list of people to call.
It's been a winning ticket with you and Richard because you've done so much together. Can you tell us how you've been able to so perfectly incorporate the Stearns and Alex Brander into the mix? I know you talked about this a little bit, but they're like your band, you know? Now, I don't want to confuse things here, but you worked with both Alex and Chris Stern, right?
Yes,
But not
yes.
together separately?
No, it's just this really interesting story. So during the Glass set, Chris was a fan. So, those guys are 13 years younger than me. So here I am kind of at the tail end of what I thought was going to be my music career. And they're at the very beginning. There's these bright-eyed little 20-year-old guys, coming into playing at the Great Scott. And they actually covered a Glass set cover. I was just so blown away. They covered a Glass set song. I guess I learned through Richard, because Chris Stern, that's a stage name. The singer for the Sterns was probably too shy to come to me, but he said to Richard that he was a fan of the Glass set. So I knew he was a singer. I knew he was a performer. I guess I knew he was a songwriter, obviously, because he co-writes with Alex in the Stearns. So when Alex just totally came out of nowhere, when Richard, oh, originally I'd wanted to do back in 2020. So when Turkish Delight reformed, just to do a final show, it inspired me, I guess, to do music again, because we were getting so much great publicity and from some reissues. It kind of gave me the strength and I wasn't as feeling down about music. So Richard, again, very similar to the Glass set, where Eric and Andy were like my instant band. Alex from the Stern, from they're actually in Big D and the Kids Table, and Alex was also in the Sterns. They became my instant band, and I started working with them. It was a bit of a different experience than with the Codetta guys, because they were in person. So that's more traditional. You hum a few bars, guitar player plays a few bars, you go back and forth. Well, I don't know. So that was really Alex just listening to everything by ear and sending me these phenomenal results. And I'd say both he and Chris are like Prince. Because they play multiple instruments. They also sing and songwrite.
Yeah,
So
Alex and Chris Stern are not, Chris is not real. They're not brothers, right?
they're
They're
not
just in a
related at
band.
all.
Yeah, the
No. Chris,
Sterns.
I
Yeah.
said to Chris, you want to use that as your stage name, right?
They
Yes, that's his. So I don't, sorry, I've totally forgotten the question, but as far as how did I meet Alex and Alex? Oh yeah.
how you got them into the mix? Because you've got a long-standing thing going on with these guys now. You know, they're,
Yeah.
and I want to talk to you a little bit about that. You're doing a lot for, you might not know it. And I was talking to Richard on the phone the other night, but you're doing a lot for him. You're promoting his studio without even knowing it
Well,
because
I hope so.
he's been
I
pigeonholed by a lot of people as a punk rock producer. You know, you're not punk rock, and you're
hope
like you've got these beautiful songs and these arrangements, and it's a whole new ball game. So I think you, and he agreed with this when I said, she's really promoting you, your studio, because the sound is so great. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yeah, I mean, he is such a ridiculously good deal financially, that I am more than happy to bend over backwards to do anything. I would sing a Richard Marr jingle, to promote his Galaxy Park, because he is just a phenomenal person. And I think I've mentioned this before. Not only does he give a fabulous deal and really great to work with. He's been like my cheerleader. He's always been pushing me. If it weren't for him coming to me and saying, I have a band for you, I mean, my best friends were like, don't do music again. So everyone's saying, don't do it, don't do it. And he's saying, do it. And I'm like, I went with Richard. So yeah, I mean, I just owe him everything. So.
Let's talk about this new record. Is there anything that separates it from the last few records in your mind, or do you feel like this is almost one long continuous project where you could actually have a box set?
No, it's definitely one long continuous project. I think the very first album, which I did with Sean Wardis, may not 100% fit in
That
that.
was early, much earlier, right?
2003, it was very cabaret, but it was also cool. I mean, I still have people come to me saying that was their favorite. So interestingly, this album that's out now wasn't intended to be my solo album. I have a solo album that's sitting in a Google Documents right now, that Chris is working on. This was going to be a side project with myself and Chris, but Chris decided that he was going to do a little bit of a sabbatical. He took the summer off, and he also bought a lot of, I think, Pro Tools and things that he hadn't had access to before. And so really did a lot of the work that Alex Stern had done, but I honestly wasn't aware that he had that ability. And again, I thought it was going to be kind of a side project. And this other album I have that's waiting to be done was kind of up in the air. I didn't know if it was going to be. Maybe I'd ask Alex to do it. Maybe I would have asked Andy to work with me. I knew I had an album. So the interesting thing about this album is I had written a lot of fragments, some final songs, and I had in mind that I wanted Chris to like them because I was going to be in the side project with him, and I wanted them to be more universal. I also was really not afraid to throw down pretty much anything because he could have thrown out 10 of them, which he did. 10 of them he didn't use. Two of them he spliced together and used as one song. So it was an interesting project. Again, that I thought was going to be like kind of a band or a side project with Chris became a solo album because of all these things happening, because other folks were not available, because he, suddenly decided that he was going to take a sabbatical, that he was going to invest some money in some Pro Tools, and that he was going to focus last summer on writing this album.
Wow. So Alex Stern and Chris Stern, if they ever work together with you on a record,
No, I mean, if I
this
had
is
the budget,
wild.
of love to have just the more the merrier, have more, more musicians. I honestly, as I mentioned, both of them are like Prince. So I'm like, I mean, they all play so many instruments so great. So I'm actually not looking to add more to either. But yeah, I think it'd be interesting. I mean, we did that one live show. I got them to perform with me for a CD release in December of last year. And just playing, literally had one rehearsal, and all my friends are still talking about how incredible the guitar player was and how incredible, just as the drummer and the bass and all of it fit together. I have one friend who said it was like being at, like an arena show, or being at, one of the larger, what are they, I don't even know what they call the Bruin Center or whatever, the whatever
The
center they,
Boston Garden.
Boston Garden, I know that I still call it that, but it was like it being one of those shows, the sound was so professional. So,
Well, these guys are accomplished musicians, all of them. I
yeah,
mean,
it's
that
incredible.
Stearns record was really good that they made years ago.
Yes,
And
and they put another one out actually. It's not out yet. There, I
oh,
mean,
wow.
Chris interrupted, I think, his album to work on mine for a while. So he's actually going to be, they're going to be putting out a new album.
And Alex Stern has an amazing body of work. He's like you. He's got the Pumps. He's got Big D.
Yeah.
He's got the Sterns. He's got a lot. These guys are accomplished musicians. Now, for
Yeah.
people out there listening, let me try to explain it, and you correct me if I'm wrong. You guys don't ever get in a studio and play together live. You do everything separately. Now, does the band just get basically arrange all the music and then you just put your vocals over it? Is that what happens?
No, I sing, and then the arranger will put music to against my vocal. And I will actually
Wow.
give a time signature. I will say I wanted it this time. And so they will put music around it, almost like a frame around a painting,
You
but it's a lot
sing a
more difficult.
cappella? You sing the
They sing
songs?
a cappella. Yeah.
What?
And sometimes they will use different things like auto-tune, but or to try to figure out what the heck notes I'm playing singing. But and I've just recently purchased a very inexpensive keyboard and I've started writing sheet music, but I've heard it doesn't help, so I quite don't understand. But yeah, no, it's a cappella. It's just and they're able to listen and develop things. So essentially, even though it's from afar, it is not dissimilar to say I were to have a guitar and go into a practice space and they were playing a guitar or they were playing a bass or piano. They're kind of jamming in a way with me.
Well, I've seen bands go in and the drummer will play all the drums and then the bass player will play over that and then the guitarist and then the vocalist would come. I've never seen it the way you do it.
It's
It's
different.
very
And you know,
unique.
they'll do the arrangements and then they'll send it to me and they say, does this work? And it's usually great. Yeah, it's a really interesting process.
So it's kind of a 50-50 split then with the lyrics and the music. They do all the music, you do all the lyrics. Is that how you look at it?
Well, no, actually, they give me credit for the music because it's the melodies, it's the major song melody.
Oh.
So it's more like a seven. Even though they're for hire, I mean, I'd like to add a zero to what I pay
They're
them.
on the, they get publishing though, right? Yeah.
They do. It's usually 30%, but if they like do more, so it would be half. And then in one case with the song "Curious Tourist," Chris would get the majority because he wrote the melody, and I came in and wrote the lyrics. And I think because he had that melody, doesn't matter if I wrote all the lyrics. That's the melody is the song, and
You have an amazing situation going on, Leah
I'm
Callahan.
very lucky. I'm very grateful, and I'm very lucky to find
Yeah.
people.
I'm really impressed by the way you, I know we've talked about this before, but your records just they just keep coming. There are several, I want to talk about some of the songs on this record because I listen. First of all, I have to tell you, I started telling you this before we started recording. I'm the kind of person where I buy a record if there's no lyrics in it, I'm pissed off. Okay, I have to go find the lyrics. So I'm old school. I remember being a little kid and just getting the album out and listening to the music, you know, right? So I love that you sent me all the lyrics for the songs. I imagine they're probably on Bandcamp too, right?
Yes, they
Yes.
are.
So if anyone out there is listening to this interview and you want to go on Bandcamp, you can listen and read the lyrics for free, but then you have to buy them after.
After April 29th.
Oh yeah, the new record, but your
Yes.
old records are all up there.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, your Bandcamp page is jammed. I was just there this morning looking. I went back to some of the old songs because I wanted to see the difference. I think I talk about that in a minute. There are several songs in this record I really like. I think right now, No One Super Enduras, is that how you say that? DUI
Duras, Duras,
Duras.
the writer. Yeah.
Those are my favorite.
Oh, nice. Thank
Do
you.
these lyrics have any secret meaning to them? I mean, I guess what I'm asking here is, do they come from like personal experience, or they just come out and you know, do you make yourself write, or do you write out of, you know, personal experience is the question, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's all personal experience. I was consciously for this album and the next album to try to write a certain way. So I have this quote by this guy who's both a poet and also a critic. And he says, good poetry takes the familiar, makes it strange, and makes even the mundane memorable. And so what I really wanted to do with these songs is make the mundane memorable, but also in some cases make it strange, but not all the songs are strange. But I do want to tell stories, but I want to tell them, I want to get better. I want to always be challenging myself as a writer. So I'm trying really hard to write music that is relatable to other people, will convey an emotion. But I do want to, I guess, kind of elevate the lyrics to, you know, again, elevate the mundane, I guess.
You know, if you read, like I read some of the lyrics before I listened to, I had listened to the songs because you had sent me the record a little while ago. So I've been listening to it. But then I went and I read some of the lyrics without listening. And it's not like they're written in a way that it's a, they're written like a story. And I'm like, how in the world does she make all this fit? And then you listen to it and you see, it's like you're not one of those people that sings like, I ran home from the sun and then I had fun. You know, you don't, you're not a rhymer. You're like, you're writing a
Times.
story. Yeah, you're writing
Like
a.
super and social climber is over the top rhyming. But yeah, some of it is more like prose. And I consciously tried to write like prose. And so credit to, for example, Alex and Chris, because I wrote the most, especially with this recent one, I wrote this very odd, it had no rhyme, no normal kind of verse chorus. And Chris wrote, for example, Duras. It's more like prose. The song No One, which is one of my favorites, it's very much like prose. And he wrote it in this amazing song. So yeah, credit to them.
Did you like go to school for writing? I don't know, maybe you told me this in the past. Did you take creative writing courses or something? I mean,
Never. No, I was actually a women's studies major in college. I was an avid reader as a child. I was going to go to grad school, but then dropped it and worked for many, many years. And now, actually, I work with a lot of very smart people, and I have to read things that are way more advanced than my knowledge, a lot of science, a lot of different things that I have to read on a daily basis. So it's actually made me a smarter person. It's funny when you hear about people in their 40s and 50s that aren't kind of writing or creative, and it makes sense. They have families, they have things going on. I really feel that if you were to look at some of my poetry or some of my writing now and look at some of my poetry from my early 20s, it's night and day because I've just been reading quite a bit. I think I've definitely gotten better. So yeah, I mean, I think my life experiences, taking time off music has affected my songwriting and just my boring day-to-day job has really elevated, I use that word again, but it's really elevated my songwriting, which is bizarre because you wouldn't think that things you have to do for money would make your songwriting better, but it really has.
I can really appreciate this, having been a writer my whole life. That's all I've ever done is written poems, stories, wrote for newspapers, magazines. So I can really appreciate this. I really, what song was I going to talk? Oh, I really like a lot of your songs, but I want the one I'm curious about when it comes to what's going on is Nowhere Girl. I just, please, can you just tell us what's going on here? Sorry.
Definitely. I mean, I know a lot of artists would just be really flattered to have like a movie about their life, and this is the movie about my life. I don't need a movie about my life. Like, I'm already getting the movie about my life. This is really the first 2 or 3 minutes are me telling my story. And then the last minute or two is Chris. He wrote a whole different verse for it. So it becomes like a 6-minute song. So he's written many of the lyrics, and certainly he's written musically the chorus. So we're co-songwriters on this. He just took it and ran with it. And I just love what he did. The viola is a strong presence in the song. But yeah, I mean, this is the story of my life, telling about looking, and it's similar to Duras, as an older person looking back at your youth and saying, well, I wouldn't want to be that person anymore. That's not me anymore, but I can appreciate that person. So yeah, that's really what it's about.
Yeah, I don't know if I've said this like 4 or 5 times already, but I love your lyrics. They're just so
Thank
good.
you.
Do you have like expectations for this record that may be different than your previous releases? Because I get the feeling that to me, you're a real artist, and I don't think you really give a shit whether anyone's gonna really go crazy for it or if they buy it or whatever. I think you're just doing it because you're an artist. Am I wrong about that?
Oh, I mean, any artist wants their stuff to get out there. And for example, a song like Nowhere Girl, I guess if I wanted to be safe, it would have been a 2.5 minute song, but it's more than a 6 minute song. But no, I 100% want my stuff to get out there. I'm very interested and my expectations, are they different? I would say I'm a different person. I'm actually strangely more optimistic than I was if you had spoken to me, and you did about a year or two ago. I'm extremely optimistic right now, and I don't know why.
You have a different hairstyle too, by the way. I noticed that. I maybe that came out wrong the way I asked it. Of course you want people to like your music and you want people to buy it, but I have a feeling that you're writing the stuff that you feel and not writing for someone else is what I meant to say.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. If you try to write things that you think people will like, I mean, you're gonna fail.
And there's a lot of people that do that. They like force themselves to, yeah, they force themselves to write songs in a certain way. So the expectation factor of this record is to just build your fan base.
100%. Yeah, I'm definitely at this kind of the songwriting is really important to me. Getting those songs out there is really important to me. And so that's the expectation, just to get as many people as possible to hear this music.
Do you like using Bandcamp as your main tool for getting your music out there? I know you're on Spotify and everywhere else,
Yeah.
but Bandcamp people can go and listen to it and they can buy it. Does it work for you?
Yeah, I love Bandcamp. I mean, I've had people come to me. There are actually specific blogs that just, which I need to learn more about, that will look for music on Bandcamp. There are college radio DJs that look for music on Bandcamp. It's become a real go-to place for people who want to discover new music, and that's key here. People who actually don't care how many followers you have, don't care, they're really just looking for music. And I've seen that in the past 2 years that Bandcamp has become a really important place for that. So it's been really key for me. It, before I don't know what I would have done if I was trying to do what I'm doing without Bandcamp.
Yeah, and also I'd like to say that there are podcasters that go on Bandcamp and look for new music too. Basically, me. I mean, whenever I hear about a band, I usually go there first. I or YouTube, you know, Spotify and YouTube is where I usually look. I'm going to change the course here for a second. You sent me a couple of your Spotify playlists, which I wish everyone would do. I love that. Everything you did to get ready for this show made it so easy for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
You even said that one of the playlists, the hot and cold one, inspired you on this album and that you have another album in your head. Now, does that count the album that you said you have already done? You have another one besides that?
No, that's the one. Yeah, I have kind of had a dry period. I haven't really written anything since probably May. But I had these two albums. So, I mean, I wrote a ton in the beginning of last year. So yeah, no, the hot and the cold and hot playlist, a lot of music I've been listening to for like 10, 15 years, but also I made for Chris in a way, because I'm like, I'd like some of these sounds in the next album. Just wanted to send you some inspiration. And the hot and cold playlist is really just, when people ask me what influences you, it's really hard for me to say because my music taste is so all over the place. I'm no musicologist. If you had asked me about one of the artists on that mix, I probably wouldn't know a lot, but I know what I like. And I know those are playlists that are my go-to, and that's what I listen to all the time.
Yeah, listeners, it's hot and cold and cold and hot. And the hot and cold is the one that inspired you. And I like that you put Bridget Bardot on there and Dandy Warhol's Jesus and Mary Chain. The one song that I listened to and I was like, wow, this totally fits with the album that you just made, Ladytron. Your
Yep.
style and their style's similar. I really enjoyed that you put that. I was familiar with that band, but they're kind of a little below the radar. And then the cold and hot playlist was funky, man. It was like
Yeah.
very funk. It was like a faraway world from your indie pop style. That's why I was surprised.
Definitely. And it's really great to be playing with guys who are doing ska. I will admit, when I was in my early 20s, I not that I didn't appreciate classic ska, for example, but I was all about the angry, loud music. And now I'm like way more about the funk and, dance music. And to be able to utilize, for example, Alex Brander, who, he loves like metal, but he also studied
The drummer you're talking about now, right?
yeah,
Yeah.
sorry, Alex Brander is a drummer. He actually studied what I'm spacing on the type of drums, metal. What are those metal drums? I can't think of the word.
I've had a million drummers on my show, but I don't know anything about their drum sets.
He studied Caribbean drumming in Trinidad.
Oh.
And so when I heard that, I'd heard from Richard that he'd studied in Latin America, and I was like, that is the person for me. So if you'd heard my glass set or my solo recordings, you might not think, oh, she's really into Latin music, but I really am. So that was just an amazing. It's like if I had done a Craigslist ad and said, must like post-punk and Latin and African, music. So, and then Chris, of course, he's played in a steel drum. That's what it's called, steel
Steel
drum.
drum.
And
Okay, yeah.
Chris played in a Chris Stern, who's on this album. His first band was a ska band, and he played horn. So I mean, it's just phenomenal to be playing with musicians have this incredible breadth of musical interests and talent.
Yeah, I think that you and Richard have a good system going on here. It's like fantastic. I can't believe the way you do it. So what's next for you? You mentioned you have that record that's done. Are you in like a comfort zone just recording and not dealing with the whole touring and playing routine game? I mean, is it just, or do you think about possibly taking it out there and playing more shows?
Yeah, I mean, I'm laser focused on writing new music and getting it out there, and I'm making up my own rules and I'm making them up as I go. So I guess, if it were to come up that I knew that it was a good business decision to say do a show or do more shows, and that that would lead to getting my music out there. As I've expressed, I've, done this before, and I've played shows, and I know. What can you get by playing out in Boston once a month? And what can you get by doing a mini tour of the United States? And so I'm, pretty experienced, and I know what would be a good decision. So really my primary goal is getting these songs out there and writing new songs. So I'm anything that would hinder that, especially because I do work full time, I'm not 25 anymore. So, that's really my focus. I'm extremely focused on that, so that would be.
Yeah, obviously you are because you've done so much in the last few years. It's incredible how much material you've put out. Wow. Thank you for coming on and talking about the new record. And I really love it. I mean, it's like you didn't call, you're not, just so people out there listening, Leah doesn't call me and say, please have me on your show again. I get in touch with her and I say, I want you on the show because I love your style. I love your writing. I've been a fan of yours for a long time. So I think you have a great formula going with Richard and these guys. Really good players, by the way. And your songwriting is great. And
Thank you.
thank you. Thank you. Thank you for
Thank
delivering all this
you.
great music to us.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming on the show.
Very, very grateful. Thank you.
Planets overlooked, the climate's
Ordinary Face from the Curious Tourist album, new album by Leah Callahan. As if Richard Marr at Galaxy Park Studios in Salem, Massachusetts wasn't already the king of punk rock. Now he has Leah making all these great indie pop records at his place. Not that he hasn't done that before. He's been across the board, but he's kind of known for, you know, breaking young punk bands and getting them started. That's right. Another plug for our friend, Mr. Marr. He deserves it. So many bands that have come on this show started with Richard. And then you have artists like Leah, you know, who keeps coming back for more, you know, and that's the sign right there that something's really working. You know, if it isn't broke, don't try and fix it. And Richard works with a lot of artists over and over again, like Leah. And we love you, Richard, Mr. Richard Marr. All right. Speaking of coming back for more, thank you for coming back for more. And please write me at twistedrico@gmail.com. And if you're a musician or a songwriter and you have music, please send it. You might hear it here. You might even hear it on the Mirror Stars podcast. We also have an Instagram page, Facebook threads, YouTube, X. You know, and on the YouTube page, by the way, you can find the Zoom interview that I did with Leah Callahan and many more interviews. There's also our TikTok page at Twisted Rico, where you can watch clips from the show, etc. All right, that's going to do it for this time. Till the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive.